At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello, Crime Salad listeners. Welcome back to another episode of Crime Salad, where we talk true crime. My name is Ashley.
And I'm Ricky.
And this week we are going to Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Milwaukee's best. What else is Milwaukee known for?
Milwaukee
tools?
Yeah, maybe.
Cheese. Well, the Packers are from Wisconsin. And
yeah, I think Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, the fans are cheeseheads.
Yeah. Never been there, but I hear it's nice.
I want to go.
Let's go. So the case that we're talking about today involves a young 27-year-old woman from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, named Kelly Dwyer, who loved yoga and frequented some of Milwaukee's trendiest bars. With her bubbly personality, it was no surprise that everyone who crossed her path loved being around her. Like most young people, Kelly had an extensive online presence, including an active presence on many online dating apps. And so, on October 12, 2013, when Kelly failed to show up for a scheduled shift at Lululemon and seemed to abruptly stop posting on social media, like she usually would be doing, those close to her immediately suspected something was wrong. So, two nights earlier, Kelly and her long-term boyfriend, Chris Zocco, had gone out to one of their favorite bars. And after a casual late night out with friends, the couple went back to Chris's apartment, and Kelly seemed to have vanished from there. Now, this happened in October of 2013. Her family and friends felt like they knew pretty quickly who was responsible for Kelly's disappearance. But they were left searching and fighting for justice for 6 years before her boyfriend was charged with homicide.
Wow, 6 years.
Yeah. So it's hard to see a case like this where it seems clear to everyone what happened for so long without a conclusion. It must have been so frustrating for Kelly's family. Now, before we get into the story of what happened in October of 2013, we need to talk about how Kelly ended up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So Kelly Dwyer was born in Cook County, Chicago, on September 27th, 1986, and she grew up in Lincolnshire, a small suburb of 7,000 people with her parents, Tony and Maureen, and her younger sister. She was bubbly and happy, and in high school, she played tennis and was a member of both the yearbook and the newspaper. Now, unfortunately, when Kelly was 16, her idyllic life was thrown a curveball when her parents announced their plans to divorce. Kelly took this really hard. Many people in her close circle commented that she seemed changed by this news. She seemed lost and directionless.
I mean, not to mention, high school's hard as it is, especially like in the later years. You have to grow up pretty quick, figure out what you're going to do in the future. I mean, then her parents divorce and like really throw her a curveball.
Yeah, that's a lot on her plate.
Yeah.
And it's already a time that teenagers can sometimes be unsure of where they fit in the world. Kelly was no different, and this divorce really shook her. It took her a while to figure out where to land. She traded tennis for yoga, and she found that she loved it so much, and she wanted to become a teacher, feeling like it gave her purpose. And so Kelly relocated to Milwaukee 4 years after graduating from high school, where she split her time between working as an educator at Lululemon, teaching yoga at Core Essence, and working as a nanny for Chef Thomas Houck.
Sounds impressive.
Yeah, a well-known chef and a restaurant owner.
Impressive.
So She felt like she had found her home. She loved the vibe and the nightlife of the city. And like we said, she worked at Lululemon, and she was very close with her coworkers. They worked together and socialized outside of work. They went to the trendiest bars, went to parties and things like that. And Kelly was just at a time of her life where she was just loving life. Even her appearance began to change. Her social media featured more photos of her smiling, dressed up to go out with her friends at bars and clubs. She was just living it up.
Living the good life.
Now, even though she moved away from her parents, she was still very close with both of them, but her dad especially. In fact, her father, Tony, came to visit her in Milwaukee just a month before she went missing. And he was thrilled at how well things were going for her after she had struggled so much after high school. Tony says that Kelly was happy and animated, outwardly upbeat and confident, and it brought him some relief to see her landing on her feet. She loved the city she now called home and found purpose in her work at Lululemon. And she recently traveled for a work-related personal development seminar. Now, at this point, Kelly was even talking about her future with her boyfriend of almost a year, Chris Zocco, who said she had qualities that reminded her of her dad. Chris seemed like a good match for Kelly. He had relocated to Milwaukee in 2009, around the same time as Kelly, although they didn't meet up until a couple years later when they were introduced by a mutual friend. Chris was almost 10 years older than Kelly. He had a degree in international business from Boston University and worked as a chief information officer for TRC Global.
A big cheese.
Yeah, where his mom Joyce also worked. His job as an IT executive afforded him a lifestyle that included luxury cars and an 18th floor apartment in Park Lafayette Towers, which is an expensive lakefront building.
Too fancy for me.
Now, while Tony was thrilled to see the change in his daughter, he felt uncomfortable with the amount of partying Kelly seemed to be doing. Tony was probably right to be suspicious, even though she seemed to be openly sharing so many details of her life that she was admitting sharing the riskier aspects of her new life. Along with the partying, Kelly was regularly drinking and using cocaine, to the extent that in recent weeks, she had been sent home from Lululemon when her boss felt like she appeared intoxicated. That September 2013 visit was the last time Tony Dwyer would ever see his daughter.
I mean, honestly, though, like, other than getting, sent home from work from Lululemon, for a 27-year-old in a big city, it's pretty normal to, be partying. I mean, it happens. Not that it can't get bad, but it's common.
Yeah. This episode is brought to you by IQ Bar. Here's why I love IQ Bar products. They're the secret weapons in my wellness arsenal. And what's not to love about the number one brain and body nutrition bar, hydration mix, and instant coffee in the U.S. that uses high-quality ingredients? Having IQ bars within my reach means no more skipping breakfast. And their IQ mix, which is a zero-sugar hydration drink that replenishes electrolytes lightning fast, heck yeah. Say goodbye to the caffeine jitters if you're a coffee lover, and hello to focus with their IQ Joe. You'll get all the coffee kick that you need without the shakes, thanks to its calming magnesium. It's smooth, steady energy that powers your entire day. IQ Joe is a quality mushroom coffee packed with magnesium, lion's mane adaptogen. It keeps you focused all day long, and their flavors are so delicious. I've been replacing IQ Joe over regular coffee. Personally, I just add some ice, some milk, a little packet of IQ Joe, and give it a little shake or stir. So good. My favorite is the mocha. Not to mention over 10,000 five-star reviews and counting. You can't go wrong. Now, they're offering an ultimate sampler pack, which includes everything you need to power your routine. It's a great way to try all IQ Bar products and flavors. You'll get 7 flavors of IQ Bars, so you can satisfy your taste buds with plant-based protein bars. You'll get 4 IQ mixes. You'll be able to replenish quickly with their zero sugar hydration mixes, and 4 IQ Joe flavors. You'll stay sharp and focused with their magnesium and lion's mane mushroom coffees. And special offer to our Crime Style listeners, you will get an exclusive 20% off plus free shipping. All you need to do is text SALAD to 64,000. Refuel smarter with IQ Bars Ultimate Sampler Pack. That's 7 IQ Bars, 4 IQ Mix Sticks, and 4 IQ Joe Sticks. And now, our special podcast listeners get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus get free shipping. To get your 20% off, just text SALAD to 64,000. Get your discount. Text SALAD to 64,000. That's SALAD to 64,000. Message and data rates may apply. See terms for details. Now, on October 12, 2013, Kelly failed to show up for her shift at Lululemon, and her coworkers were immediately worried. Like most 27-year-olds in 2013, Kelly was very active on social media, but there had been no activity for several days, and all of their calls were going straight to voicemail. And one of her coworkers went to Kelly's apartment to check up on her. Her roommate answered the door and said she hadn't seen Kelly since October 10th. Which was when she was leaving for a date with Chris.
So what was that, like a couple days later, a day later?
This was about 2 days after.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, someone who posts on social media all the time, like their cell phones go into voicemail. It's kind of weird.
Yeah. And they thought that too. Now, like we mentioned, the Lululemon crew, they were all very close. And Kelly's boss called her boyfriend, Chris, who ended up returning her call about 4 hours later and left a voicemail mentioning that he had been out Christmas shopping and had missed her calls. Chris's voicemail also said that Kelly had left his place around 9 a.m. on October 11th and that she wasn't answering his calls or text either.
That's strange. You know what else is strange, though? Christmas shopping in October. For a man. Like, we don't plan ahead. Like,
no.
That's like, you know, week of, day before type stuff.
And it's weird that he specifically mentioned 9 a.m. on October 11th, you know?
Specific.
Like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's weird. He said he'd assumed that she was angry with him, but now he was concerned to hear that no one else has heard from her either. Now, at this point, Kelly was officially a missing person, and her disappearance was reported to the police.
You know, and a lot of times, the over-explaining is often a clue of the guilty.
Can be.
Right.
Plus, he waited around for 4 hours being like, oh my God, what am I going to say? Like, how am I going to pull this off?
There you go.
Or maybe he is innocent. We don't know.
It can go either way.
Now, around this time, Kelly's family traveled to Milwaukee, and together with Kelly's friends and coworkers, they organized a search and printed off missing person flyers, and the Milwaukee Police Department started their investigation right away by going to Chris's apartment to talk with the last person known to have seen Kelly. So right off the bat, everyone's kind of like, it's definitely this Chris Zocco guy, you know? Like, the police are in on it, the family, the friends, like, everything's pointing to him. So you think that this would be, like, a quick search, we found something.
Right. Not to mention, it's only a couple days later, and they're going to his apartment. Like, something's gotta be there.
Yeah, and like we said, what was it, 6 years this went on before he was arrested?
Yeah, 6 or 7, something like that.
Yeah. So the police, they go to Chris Zocco's apartment, where he tells them that he and Kelly did cocaine and smoked marijuana before going out to their favorite bar, Allium, right across the street from Chris's apartment. And they spent the night out with Kelly's friends, socializing and eating pizza from a place called Ian's before calling it a night. When they returned, they finished the remaining cocaine. Kelly gave him oral sex, and they went to sleep. She then left that morning around 9 a.m. Now, Chris describes Kelly as a friend with benefits, someone he likes to party with, but says that they aren't actually in a monogamous relationship, and suggests that maybe she met up with another guy after leaving his apartment the morning of October 11th.
You know, what's interesting, though, is didn't she and her friends refer to him as, like, the boyfriend?
Yes.
But he refers to it as, like, some girl, friends with benefits. She probably met up with some other dude.
Yeah. Now, almost immediately, the detectives feel like something is suspicious about his story. The security cameras that were around the property captured Kelly and Chris re-entering Park Lafayette Towers at 2:37 a.m. Friday, as Chris said. But there is no video capturing Kelly leaving the apartment.
Oh, right, because she said, or he said that she left at 9 a.m.
Right.
So no video of that.
Nope.
She didn't leave. It's usually what that means.
So since Chris's story included details about drug use, police can use that to obtain a search warrant issued for Chris's apartment. On October 16th, nearly a week after Kelly was last seen by anyone, Chris's apartment was searched by police. The apartment is a mess, with lines of cocaine laid out on magazines, canisters of marijuana in the fridge, and a ton of other drug-related paraphernalia. It also looked like the shower curtain in the guest bathroom was torn right off the rod. The hooks remained with remnants of the shower curtain attached to it, but there was no sign of the actual shower curtain anywhere.
So this is a week later that they're searching.
Yes.
And the apartment still looks like this.
Yeah, he put no effort into cleaning up any drug.
Or did he put the effort into cleaning up a more serious mess?
Yeah, see, this we just do drugs here, like...
Right, right. You don't want to clean it up too much, and then it's suspicious. But maybe he spent all his time bleaching up some stains, you know? Like...
Good point.
Just saying.
Hey there, Crime Salad fans. We're taking a quick moment here because we are thrilled to bring you this episode with a very special shout-out to our amazing sponsor, Lola V, the revolutionary hairline created by none other than Jennifer Aniston. Yep, you heard that right. Jennifer Aniston was tired of choosing between effective hair products and those that are actually good for you. And so Lola V was born, solving this age-old dilemma with a bang. And we all know our hair goes through a lot. Dyes, heat, stress, you name it. It's about time we treated it right. Lola V is here to rescue your hair with its clean, plant-powered formulas tailored for all hair types. This isn't just about repairing damage. It's about fortifying your hair for the future. And guess what? As a special thank you to all of our wonderful Crime Salad listeners, Lola V is offering an exclusive 15% discount on your entire order. Just head over to lolav.com and use the promo code Crime Salad at checkout. Trust us, if anyone knows hair, it's Jennifer Aniston. I've personally been using Lola V for a while now, and honestly, I can't rave enough about it. The Glossing Detangler has been a complete game changer for my morning routine, making my hair feel like silk, and it's actually manageable without any heaviness. It's like giving my hair a daily dose of luxury. Lola V's products are full of naturally diverted plant-based ingredients, free from silicones, sulfates, parabens, and gluten. These items are also cruelty-free and vegan. It's goodness you can feel great about. Transform your shower routine with the restorative shampoo, conditioner, and the intensive repair treatment. It's not just a cleanse, it's a revival for your hair, leaving it stronger with every wash. And after showering, Lola V's Glossing Detangler is perfect. It works together seamlessly to prime and protect, delivering that Jennifer Aniston approved shine. So why settle for less when you can pamper your hair with the best? Remember, use that promo code CRIMESALAD for your exclusive discount. Happy listening and even happier styling. Courtesy of Lola V. So unlock Jennifer Aniston approved hair at lolav.com. As our loyal listeners, you'll get an exclusive 15% off your entire order when you use code CRIMESALAD at checkout. That's 15% off your order at lolavie.com with promo code Crime Salad. Please note that you can only use one promo code per order and discounts can't be combined. After your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them that we sent you. So detectives, they bring in their cadaver dog named Molly.
Oh yeah, I love these dogs.
And she alerts to the scent of human remains on a shovel in the building trash room, on an outside dumpster, an empty parking stall, inside the trash chute on the 18th floor, a pile of clothes near the washer and dryer inside Chris's apartment, and various locations in the guest bathroom, the master bedroom, and the bottom of a Swiffer mop.
A Swiffer mop.
Human remains, like human decomposition.
Molly, you got a nose of gold.
She deserves the biggest bone.
The biggest golden treat there is.
Now, inside the car, Molly alerted on a pouch and a garage door opener that was attached to the visor and the toolbox that was in the trunk, also the exterior driver's side door and at the trunk.
Dead giveaway. Of course he drives an Audi, though. It's got to be a DB.
Now, Chris, he was arrested that day, but not for what you would think. He was actually arrested on drug charges and taken in for more questioning. He's super casual about this whole entire thing, even joking when he was asked if he had any mental health conditions like bipolar or schizophrenia. And he laughs and says, I suppose that's open to interpretation by somebody.
Sounds like he's watched The Joker too much. He's in villain mode.
In villain mode. I like that. But I mean, think about it. How are you even joking about this whenever your girlfriend is missing and there's human decomposition scent found all over your belongings, like your apartment, your car? I mean, all the arrows are pointing straight to you.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like, this isn't some random girl. Like, are you not feeling anything? Like, feeling any type of way? Like, your girlfriend, you just found out your girlfriend is dead. Maybe it was his alter ego.
Now, during this interview, Chris sticks to his story, giving the same details in the same timeline, but he does say something that comes back to bite him later on. When asked if Chris and Kelly were monogamous, Chris said no, saying that he's a bachelor who loves his current independent lifestyle and doesn't have anyone he would consider a girlfriend at all.
DB.
Now, while he's in custody, police search Chris's phone and find something that shocks them. There is a video of Chris and Kelly engaged in an aggressive sex act. Kelly is bound, and it's clear that she is struggling to breathe. What's not clear is whether she's conscious or even knows that she's being recorded. There is also a series of pictures that depict Kelly unconscious and naked on the bed. But the video and pictures were taken over 3 weeks earlier on September 22nd and not on the night Kelly disappeared.
So like passed out unconscious from drinking or drugs or like choked during sex and passed out? Like, do we know?
Yeah, I'm not sure, but it was shocking as they reported.
Okay.
Now, the video that they found on his phone was enough for another search warrant. And on October 17th, 2013, police returned to Chris Zocco's apartment to look for evidence of items that could be used to restrain another person, as well as collect data storage devices. And police found 1,020 pornographic files across several external hard drives and burned CDs. 110 of these files included BDSM themes. Now, Detective Sean Lipps testified at a later trial that this included depictions of apparent non-consensual conduct or conduct involving any kind of asphyxia.
But what they found wasn't like videos of her, right?
No, these were just random videos, but they specified that it looked non-consensual. Like these videos showed activity that involved, you know, choking or making people pass out.
Right.
Against their will.
So basically they're saying that this is a possible influence or a clue or something of what happened.
Yeah. Like putting these videos together along with the video on his phone kind of tells that he had some sort of strange kink.
Yeah. But I think it's like, we're not saying that what was on the phone was consensual or not at this point.
Yeah, no clue.
Okay.
Now, among the massive collection of files that were found, police also discovered 23 instances of child sexual abuse material.
Child.
Yeah. Chris was charged with an additional 17 counts of possession of child pornography on October 23rd, 2013. What a piece of...
I mean, not all Audi drivers are douchebags, but in this case, he was.
Is it Audi or Audi?
Audi? I don't know.
Like you had an Audi belly button?
I don't. For the record, I don't.
So Chris was finally going to trial, just not for anything related to Kelly's disappearance. And he pleaded not guilty to the charges related to the possession of child sexual abuse materials. His defense was that he didn't know that it was on his hard drives.
Were they his hard drives?
Yeah, they were in his house.
Wasn't me.
In an interview, Chris's mom, Joyce, said, "If you're an IT guy, you collect stuff. So you collect old hard drives, you collect disks, you collect, you know, you just collect IT equipment." And that particular hard drive was from his former place of work in Boston. He didn't know that it was even there. And to this day, his family believes that he's just unlucky to take possession of someone else's old hard drive filled with CSAM, which is child pornography.
Oh, I was wondering, actually. Honestly, though, I mean, I don't know what he did at his past job. He was an IT guy, I guess, so maybe. But at this new company, he's the CIO. Like, he's not touching hard drives. He's not walking around as, like, some help desk guy. I highly doubt he's out here, like, collecting company USB ports and hard drives. Speculation. Just saying.
But couldn't they find that it was his, like, I don't know much about hard drives, but, like, whenever you download stuff or, like, put stuff on there, can't you somehow down the line find the owner?
It would be hard to, though, because each file has what's called metadata. So that would be, like, creation date and all of that. And, like, sometimes it could be tied back, and it depends on, like, what types of controls may have been, like, in place at if it happened, like, at a company. But if this is stuff he's, like, downloading off the dark web and throwing on a hard drive, not really, no.
Anyway, nerd, the defense didn't seem believable to a jury.
Rude.
And he was found guilty of 16 out of the 17 counts of possession on November 13th, 2014. 1 month later, Chris pleaded guilty to the drug charges. And on December 18th, 2014, Chris Zocco was found guilty of maintaining a drug trafficking place, possession of THC, and possession of cocaine. Between all of the drug and CP charges, Chris Zocco was sentenced to 19 years in prison and added to the sex offender registry.
So how did they get the trafficking charge? Like, I don't know, like maybe just the amount of drugs they found that would categorize it into like trafficking, because I've never heard of anything that sounded like he was like distributing.
Yeah, possibly. But doesn't this all seem like such a distraction from, like, I know, like, drug charges and all this and stuff, but there's a young woman who was murdered inside of his apartment, and there's all of these clues, and it just seems like such a distraction. Like, I know, you know.
It's that typical thing. I mean, there's no body, no charge. So, I mean, you got to get them where you can.
Yeah.
Like, this gets them on record. This gets them in front of a court. I mean, they're most likely, unless it goes cold, they're most likely still working on the case and trying to hit them with that charge.
Yeah, I just feel like Kelly's family at this point, like, her friends and her family were devastated. Like, come on. And they did feel this way. They felt like justice wasn't served. And they wore buttons to Chris's sentencing that said, "Bring Kelly home." Even though Chris was going to jail for a long time, none of the charges were related to Kelly's disappearance. Without her body, like Ricky said, the evidence against Chris just wasn't strong enough to warrant a charge.
And honestly, it probably feels good to charge him, but it doesn't bring closure.
Right.
But that's why, like, these Facebook groups and everything, like, it's always justice for so-and-so, you know, they're so important, you know, to get involved with, to share if you feel passionate about, because, you know, it gets more eyes on it. You know, information may come up. Like, these are things that can help ongoing investigations.
Yeah. And that's the next thing I was going to bring up. They continued their search and they even created a Facebook page to coordinate the efforts and to keep people talking about Kelly because they didn't want her story to just go cold, you know?
Yeah.
Like, to them, it was like, we lost this amazing person. And it just seems like, you know, at this point, are we ever going to get justice? Is Kelly ever going to come home? Like, what do we do from here?
Yeah. Honestly, I mean, there's a lot of cool, like, nonprofits, like Season of Justice. I mean, they've reached out to us. We've talked to them. They raise money for cold cases, try to get some momentum, get things going.
Yeah.
There's a lot of cool things out there.
Oh, yeah. We love them. Now, both Tony and Maureen, who are the parents of Kelly, gave interviews to the media to make sure no one forgot about Kelly or the circumstances of her disappearance. But unfortunately, as more time went on without a resolution, the Dwyers became more and more discouraged. In April of 2015, Kelly's case was reclassified as a cold case. Kelly's family acknowledges in an interview that they no longer hold out any hope that Kelly is alive and that their goal is now to recover her remains so that they can properly grieve. Ugh, that hurts.
Yeah, it's awful. It's all they want.
Seeing Chris in court, but not getting the closure you need to mourn, I just couldn't imagine how that felt. It honestly, like, ugh, eats me away. This is the saddest part of the story. Hearing Kelly's family giving up hope of ever seeing her alive again. And it was frustrating for the investigators, too, because they knew that Kelly had been at Chris's apartment that night. He confirmed that. And they had footage of her entering the apartment with Chris, but there was...
Not leaving.
Not leaving, yeah. And there was also the photo evidence and video evidence that the couple engaged in dangerous sexual activity, which resulted in difficulty breathing and unconsciousness. And they could speculate that Kelly didn't leave the apartment on her own since there was no footage showing that.
You know, and honestly, like, what happened? You know, like, we know that from these videos, like, this is an interest. He admitted that they, I don't know if he said they had sex, but they said that they were sexually active that night. Like, did something go too far? Did he have to cover it up? Did he just flat out kill her? Like, what happened?
Yeah. And the police didn't know either. They just had these details. They didn't have enough to charge Chris with anything relating to Kelly's disappearance.
Not to mention, I don't want to give him benefit of the doubt, but like, was it Chris? Like, yeah, she didn't leave the apartment, but I mean, could she have like snuck out? Not on purpose, but like, did she just leave and maybe the cameras didn't hit her or maybe some of the cameras were like rotating, speculating, but like, is there even a chance that she could get out without being seen? Is, you know, could it be someone else? Maybe he didn't even do it.
Yeah. And that's why it was kind of left cold at this point. It's so sad. But it just seems so obvious because of what the cadaver dog alerted to the police, you know, like kind of points out exactly like what happened in sequence, sort of, you know?
Yeah. Not to mention like the garbage chute.
Yeah.
Like the bed, the guest room, the bathroom.
It's like, all lined up for you.
It's crazy. Like, he definitely did it. But, and honestly, that's like for the family. They know he did it. They can't prove it. But then you also have that like, did he? Like, maybe he didn't. Like, maybe she's still out there.
Ugh.
You know, like maybe you get a little bit of hope here and there, and it sucks.
If only dogs could talk.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to get into that, but our dog would not be very polite.
Or helpful.
Or definitely not helpful.
Sleeps at least 21 hours a day.
Well, it's a pug. Definitely not getting that purple heart.
Now, on May 1st, 2015, a resident of Jefferson County, about 45 miles outside of Milwaukee, was shed hunting in some thickets near his home when he spotted what he thought was a deer leg bone. For those of you who don't know, which I didn't know, shed hunting is searching for the antlers that deer drop annually.
I definitely didn't know that. I thought it was just hunting in a shed.
Or going to Home Depot looking for the best shed.
Well, like a hunting blind. That's what I assumed.
So anyway, when this hunter gets closer, he sees what he thinks looks like a human skull. The whole skeleton is mostly intact, lying face down at the bottom of a deep embankment. The right leg is rotated inward, and the left arm is grotesquely contorted behind the ribs and backbone. There are no clothes or any other items, only bones. Now, according to the Justice for Kelly Dwyer Facebook page, when her family heard about the discovery, they just knew right away that the remains belonged to Kelly.
So could there be some clues there, being that, one, she's naked? Like, could it have been during a sex act? Or coincidence? But, I mean, you have to think about it, at least.
Yeah, true. It took the police 5 days before the remains could be identified as Kelly's using dental records. 19 months after her disappearance, Kelly's remains had finally been found. Now that they identified the remains, the investigation is reclassified again as a homicide. Although prosecutors decided to take their time with the investigation because Chris is already in prison, serving a 19-year sentence.
Well, taking their time would be an understatement. I mean, we said at the beginning this was like a 6-7 year case, and they found the body after 19 months?
Yeah. Well, they wanted to make sure that they had a rock-solid case before filing charges.
I mean, I guess he's already in jail. I guess, is that what they're saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's not going anywhere.
Now, the medical examiner at this time was unable to determine an official cause of death due to the condition of Kelly's remains. But the lack of physical evidence of violence supports the police theory of how Kelly died based on that September 22nd, 2013 video they found on Chris's phone. Investigators determined this type of sex act can easily become fatal, and they began to look for women who may have had a similar sexual history to Chris.
Oh, and that's probably not hard to find because he was a player.
Right? From this point, it took another 2 years of investigation before Chris Zocco was charged on 3 counts related to Kelly's death. First degree reckless homicide, hiding a corpse, and strangulation and suffocation. Now, earlier, Ricky mentioned this, but Chris, if you remember, was adamant in his interview with the police that he didn't have a girlfriend, right? Like, he had multiple girls that he was talking to, and Kelly also was talking to multiple guys.
Right. But she said this was her boyfriend, and it, honestly, it seemed like it was a committed thing, at least to her.
Right. Now, after the news broke out about Kelly's disappearance and Chris's drug and child pornography charges, police got a call from someone saying that they had seen Chris's photo on the news and Chris had been in a long-term relationship with his sister Megan since 2009. Megan was shocked to hear that he had been dating Kelly or anyone else because she believed that they were monogamous and on the path to marriage.
Oh, pattern.
They had even met each other's families several times, although they didn't live together. Megan said that their relationship was serious enough that Chris had offered to have her parents stay in his spare bedroom for a visit that they had planned for the weekend after Kelly went missing.
Like, right after.
Yeah, and if you remember, Molly, the cadaver dog, alerted to the police human decomposition in that guest room.
Right. And they didn't even search the apartment for a week. So it's like back to back.
Yeah.
Back to back to back.
Now, Megan, this young woman, she ended up becoming a key witness. She spent the weekend with Chris after Kelly's death and could speak to changes in his behavior over the weekend. They showed Megan photos from inside of Chris's apartment of what it looked like after she told them that she had helped decorate it. She provided details about the timeline of events and confirmed if there was anything missing from his apartment.
Like, oh, that rug's gone. I bought that rug.
Yeah.
Oh, that lamp.
And Megan confirmed that the guest bathroom was missing the shower curtain, which, do you remember the little...
You get water all over the floor if you don't have that.
There was also a rug and some towels missing.
Wasn't there like fragments of fabric or something like on the shower curtain hooks?
So, you know, like if you could picture a plastic shower curtain with like those metal circle things.
If you like ripped it off.
If you pulled it off, those metal little circle things would like still remain.
Yeah.
So that's what was left behind. During the police search, they found that and was like, Okay. Oh, that's weird.
So even if there was like a new shower curtain, then they saw like remnants of the old material or whatever, the old pieces.
Yeah. When the police went to go look inside this apartment, there wasn't a shower curtain at all.
That's weird.
Now, Megan also mentioned that there was something much larger missing from the apartment, a travel golf bag that Chris had left in front of the TV for weeks.
Wait, travel golf bag? Not just a golf bag. This is something different.
This is like a bigger sized golf bag that...
Oh, to put the golf bag in. Like if you're traveling.
What?
I'm reverse engineering this, but this is a suitcase for a golf bag.
Basically, it could fit a body if you really tried to stuff a body in there.
But a suitcase for a golf bag. I'm right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Investigators learned that the bag was silver and probably 2.5 feet long.
2.5 feet long. Okay. That could hold a golf bag.
Or a body.
Or a body. Yeah.
There was also more security footage. On October 11th, the morning that Chris told the police Kelly left around 9 a.m., Chris was recorded leaving the apartment around 10:06 a.m. 2 minutes after this, Kelly's phone goes dead and is untraceable.
Oh, so it most likely was pinging at the apartment.
Yeah.
But then it's just dead, gone. Coincidentally, when he leaves.
So possibly the phone was broken or turned off. Maybe the battery was taken out, depending on what type of phone it was.
Right.
It was just untraceable. 2 minutes after he left that garage.
Wow. Okay. Painting a picture. He did it.
Now, another 16 minutes after this, Chris was seen back again at the garage, standing by the trunk of his car. There is a grainy photo showing what looks like a large silver object in the trunk of his car, which investigators believe is consistent with the missing golf bag.
The travel golf bag.
Yeah, the bag that Megan was talking to them about
that
was left in front of the TV for however many days. Now, throughout the day, videos show Chris coming and going from his apartment to the car several more times, loading items inside of the car before finally driving out of the parking garage just before 6:30 p.m. So Chris had a busy day. Wouldn't you say, like, he's coming, he's going, he's driving around, he's doing all this weird stuff. You know, it's probably the day that he was cleaning up the murder and cleaning up the mess so that he didn't look guilty. Well, on this same day, during the evening of October 11th, he was supposed to meet up with Megan on a date around 7:30, but he arrived an hour late because...
That day.
Yeah. He just got kind of caught up with, you know, busy stuff, personal stuff.
I mean, he's packing the car the entire day, wasn't going on a trip, and he's late for a date?
Yeah. I don't know. It's weird. So yeah, he arrives an hour late. And Megan questioned him, why weren't you answering my phone calls? I was calling you. What's going on? And Chris told her that the SIM card on his phone was broken and needed to be replaced. Darn. Don't you hate when that happens? When your SIM card breaks on your phone?
Never happen.
Dang it. I hate when that happens. And to explain why he was so late, he gave Megan the excuse that he had driven to his mother's home to drop off his summer sports equipment for storage.
Oh.
Very important to do.
Could he have dropped off the body?
I don't know. Sounds kind of suspicious. Now, Megan told the investigator, for the rest of the night, things with Chris seemed off. He seemed very nervous and easily startled, and things just seemed odd with him. He did this uncharacteristic thing where he had extreme night sweats that were so heavy that they actually had to change the sheets in the middle of the night.
That's not normal for him?
No.
Oh, me either.
Now, the next morning, which brings us to October 12th, this was the same day Kelly's missing person report was filed. Chris left to take a long drive by himself. Now, listening to Megan's description of events, combined with what investigators knew about the timeline of events, it was likely Chris was so nervous because Kelly's body was still in the trunk of his car while he was with Megan that night.
Oh.
And he took this long drive to dispose of Kelly's remains and belongings. So those night sweats were related to this 100%.
I would think, yeah. Wait, so that would mean that Kelly was most likely like in the car overnight, like while he was staying at Megan's.
Yeah, outside of Megan's apartment. And he's just thinking to himself like, oh my gosh, there's a body in the back of my car. Oh my gosh, you know.
Yeah, there's no way, like he didn't sleep.
No wonder why he had the night sweats, soaking those sheets.
Freaking out. Peed his pants probably.
Now, this was all such a weird timeline of events. The errands that Chris ran were just strange. He went to a specialty cheese shop in Madison, Wisconsin, where he bought a block of spicy cheese because it was a favorite of Megan's parents. You know, the ones who were coming to stay in his guest room in a matter of days?
Yikes.
And his cell phone was off for most of the day, but debit receipts show that Chris purchased the cheese at 9:55 a.m. and around noon, he purchased new running shoes from a Sports Authority store. Now, despite the two locations only being about 45 minutes apart, there was a 90-minute time gap that Chris could not account for.
Not to mention, his cell phone's off this entire time.
Very strange.
Which I wonder if that's why he made up the little like SIM card thing.
Yeah. Now, just to remind you, this specific day where he ran all these errands, getting cheese and new shoes and driving, you know, over an hour away or however long it was, this was the day that Kelly was reported missing.
Right.
So he was kind of just like running away from that, like trying to avoid, you know, family and her friends and stuff like that, questioning him. I'm just going to go on a cheese run. I'm going to pick up some new shoes and go shopping.
Honestly, though, too, I mean, he's like totally off the radar.
Yeah. And what did he do during that 90-minute gap?
Right.
Like, what did you do? Are you eating a block of cheese to yourself and you just didn't want to admit it to anyone?
So what did they do? They basically calculated the debit purchases then and said, okay, this would have taken X amount of time.
45 minutes, yeah.
But it actually took you this amount of time. So like, what were you doing?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh.
Now on the Sunday of that weekend, Chris and Megan went out for brunch. And out of the blue, Chris suggests that they should think about relocating west to be closer to Megan's family. Megan had suggested the move the previous year when presented with a job opportunity in Denver, but Chris had wanted no part of relocating, so Megan took a different job that allowed her to remain with him in Milwaukee. Megan was surprised by his suggestion because she thought that they had ended any discussion of moving. And it's kind of weird, out of the blue, hey, why don't we go out west? Now, the rest of this weekend was uneventful. They spent a quiet day together on Sunday before Megan left on a business trip. It was the last time they ever saw each other until Megan appeared in court. And when she returned to Milwaukee, she saw the missing posters of Kelly Dwyer and heard that a 38-year-old man who lived in the Park Lafayette building had been arrested on drug and sex charges. And it was this news that prompted her family to reach out to the police.
I mean, it's important here too to point out, like Megan is also a victim of Chris. 3.5 years, she thought they were exclusively dating. But right. He's out here living like this double life. Like, you know, doing lines of cocaine with multiple women, you know, doing these weird sex acts. Like she could have ended up the same exact way.
Oh my gosh, 100%. And she had no clue. Oh, the trust level, I wouldn't be able to trust anyone after
no,
this.
No, because for 3.5 years, you thought someone was a totally different
person.
You're
like, I'm going to marry this guy. Like, we're going to move out west, you know.
He's perfect.
She had no clue. Ugh. Now, when the police began to look for women who engaged in similar activities with him, there were 5 women who came forward to report aggressive sexual behavior against Chris Zacco. 5 women. Now, one of the women says that she took out a restraining order against Chris after they broke up in 2005. And another woman who agreed to testify was referred to only as Miss C to protect her identity. She told the court that she had met Chris on Craigslist after he responded to an ad she had posted seeking a casual relationship with a dominant, submissive role model. So Miss C, she testified that the relationship initially was exactly what she had been looking for, and they even had consensually recorded videos engaging in sex acts, similar to the one that Kelly and Chris did. But things began to escalate, and Chris began ignoring their predetermined safe word and signals to stop.
Oh.
Although all of their encounters occurred at Chris's apartment, things between them escalated when Chris showed up at her home and raped her while her children were asleep in a nearby room.
Jesus.
After that point, she discontinued all contact with him because she believed that she was no longer safe and willing to participate in their relationship. And while his defense team acknowledged that Kelly was murdered, Chris had remained steadfast in his claims that he had nothing to do with Kelly's death and continued to suggest that she lived a risky lifestyle with drug use and casual sex that led her to cross paths with the real murderer after she left his apartment on the morning of October 11, 2013.
I mean, it worked for OJ. He always said the murderer was still out there. The real killer is still out there.
Well, he just died, so.
Rip.
After 9 days of testimony, the jury began their deliberation. It only took them 3 hours to reach their decision on October 5th, 2018, almost exactly 5 years after Kelly Dwyer went missing. Chris Zacco was found guilty on all 3 counts: first-degree reckless homicide, hiding a corpse, and strangulation and suffocation. Now, in addition to the 19 years Chris was already serving on drug and child pornography charges, he was sentenced to 26 years for first-degree reckless homicide and 5 years for hiding Kelly's body. The charges of homicide, hiding a corpse, and his existing sentence are to be served consecutively. An additional 2-year sentence for the strangulation in the September 2013 phone video will be concurrent. Judge Jeffrey Wagner called Chris's decision to hide Kelly's body and leave her family agonizing about her fate for more than a year extremely aggravating. And he made an unexpected decision to add a $10,000 fine to the charge for hiding a corpse. Whether or not Kelly's death was intentional or accidental, it's pretty clear that Chris Zacco took extreme steps to cover up her death and hide her remains. The prosecutor in this case, Sarah Hill, described this decision and continued denial as an utter lack of empathy that demonstrates extreme narcissistic, almost pathological behavior. To Chris Zacco, Kelly Dwyer was expendable, something to be used and thrown away, she said.
You know, in a case like this, though, I don't think Chris cared at all, you know, about the family or friends or the grief that they would be going through. I mean, he hid the body to protect himself, you know, his own selfish, you know, ways.
Yeah. I mean, the things that he did after, like the trip that he did, the lies that he made up, the girlfriend that he met up with, you know, it's just.
Well, not to mention that all of these women, most of these women, two of these women, believe that they were in, you know, long-standing monogamous relationships.
Yeah.
That alone is selfish.
This case just left so many victims in the wake of Chris Zacco's self-centered priority of gratification.
And for so freaking long, too.
Yeah, he didn't seem to care, like, who he left physically or emotionally hurt. He was just, it was just what he wanted, and hopefully he got away with it. Nothing will help Kelly Dwyer's loved ones come to terms with the circumstances of her death. We also want to acknowledge the bravery of these women and the five others who came forward and shared their private aspects of their sexual histories, consensual and non-consensual.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's not easy to share those things. And in cases like this, I mean, it really helped to build a case against them.
Yeah, for sure.
So just speculating, though, like, what do you think happened? Like, do you think it was consensual? Do you think it was non-consensual? I mean, do you think this was like an argument that broke out?
I think that this just went way too far, you know, and kind of like how one of his past victims said that, you know, at first everything was consensual and then it just got kind of like,
He was ignoring
her safe words and things like that. I think it just got to that point with the mix of cocaine and alcohol and all these other things. He just went too far and went against her safety.
Honestly, I mean, as a selfish person, I'm speculating here, but like, it kind of seems like he liked to push the limits. You know, maybe he was ignoring the safe words and seeing if he could get that extra couple seconds, or maybe he was doing this to girls where they would pass out, like the video that was found on the cell phone.
Yeah, the video that he took.
Exactly.
He enjoyed the idea of
her being unconscious.
Yeah, her being unconscious and the thousands of videos that he held on the hard drives.
That, I mean, it's just definitely depicted,
yeah,
you know, non-consensual acts.
Yeah, like he was into this sort of thing. And just him trying to get away with it, like, I just want to, like, punch him right in the face.
Oh, that would be great if we could punch him.
Yeah, there should just be, like, at CrimeCon, we should just have, like, all of these a-holes lined up, and you can just punch them if you want.
That would be really fun, actually.
Like, punching bag. We can just put different.
Wow, we could have, like, a true crime workout, like, in the morning.
That's a good idea.
Like, hit him in the nose. Bam. Hit him in the nose.
Hit him in the plums.
Knee him in the groin. AKA the plums.
Enjoy your day.
Right. Wow. But let us know what you think. Like, I think something that we want to do with the podcast a little bit more is like hear from you guys more. And we've gotten to the point now where we hear from you quite a bit. Like, we have a pretty good group of Instagram people who are always sending us messages. You know, a lot of them are like case suggestions, and definitely keep doing that.
Which is awesome. Thank you guys so much. I think this was a case suggestion, actually.
I think it was too. A lot of them have been lately. Yeah. But like, even just message us and say like, hello, hi. Like, we'll talk.
Yeah.
I think I'm cool.
Ricky is pretty cool. He's my best friend.
Yeah, some people hate me.
I hate you sometimes, but it's okay.
It's okay.
I love you at the end of the day.
What about at the beginning?
At the beginning, too. It's just like the middle of the day.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
I feel that way, too.
All right. Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, if you liked this one, or if you like Crime Salad, let us know.
Pun.
Through our reviews on Apple Podcast, if you listen on there.
Oh, yeah. I like when you guys say nice things.
Oh, yeah. Please just give us all the glory.
A lot of people say bad things. I want to see
like
the nice.
Bad crime salad lettuce. No, no, no. We like the fresh, good stuff.
Crisp.
The crunchy, crispy, juicy lettuce leaves.
I think we're getting carried away. We don't even know what we're talking about.
I need more salad in my life.
No, but honestly, like, reviews, tell a friend, even like, you know, sharing an Instagram story or whatever of you listening, like that helps us so much.
Or even if like, if you go on podcast forums on like Reddit or on like Facebook groups.
Oh, that stuff's good.
Mention us, because that really helps. There's so many listeners on those little things.
And I hate plugging support because you guys support us so much, but we do have Patreon, ad-free, $1. We do have, you know, Apple Plus. Like those are all great ways to support us and, you know, help us keep doing what we're doing and hopefully do it better.
Yeah. And hopefully we can upgrade our booth into a room eventually. That's the plan.
That would be nice. And then maybe we can add video.
Yeah. And I can get my hair done so we can do video.
Oh, I want to get my hair done.
You're losing your hair, bro.
I know. I want to get it made up, glued back on.
I can do that for you. I know how to do it. We'll just use a Sharpie.
No.
All right. Thank you all for listening. We will see you next time.
See ya.